This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. Coming up, we'll talk music with Puffy. Nah, not that one. But first, there's an old adage in the movie industry that goes, if you want to send a message, call Western Union. Political statements usually don't sell tickets or even popcorn at $3.50 a bucket, but there are exceptions. Blaxploitation films began as a political commentary on Hollywood itself, with nearly all black casts proving in the 1970s that black actors could make commercially successful movies written and directed from an African-American view. The pictures were mostly small-budget crime dramas. Sweet Sweetback's badass song, Shaft, and Foxy Brown, among others, starring the likes of Richard Roundtree and Pam Grier. Now, decades later, Hollywood is celebrating blaxploitation movies in mainstream fare. Austin Powers in Goldmember opens this weekend, and it features Beyoncé Knowles as Foxy Cleopatra.
Austin, I want to go to the future with you. We can catch Goldmember together.
I should warn you, Foxy, 2002 is very different.
Well, the future better get ready for me, because I'm Foxy Cleopatra, and I'm a whole lot of woman.
Yeah, baby. Just what the world needs, another Austin Powers imitator. Our entertainment critic, Elvis Mitchell, joins us from New York. Elvis, thanks for being with us.
That aside, I live too long when I hear Scott Simon sing Sweet Sweetback's badass song. That's one. That's the evil of millennium. Michael Jackson was right.
Listen, in the new blaxploitation, well, we don't use that word anymore. In these send-ups of blaxploitation films, is there anything other than laughs?
One of the things actually is kind of funny that Austin Powers has in common with a lot of blaxploitation films is kind of joy in carnality. You know, what does Austin Powers do but talk about sex? He's his own best sexy beast. And one of the great things about the blaxploitation films of the 70s is that, you know, that was a period where it was a real downer in mainstream American movies. It was basically Nixon-era, Watergate-era, Vietnam-era movies. There's a real cynicism and a real sourness and a real feeling of inefficacy. And in blaxploitation, the heroes conquered, they won, they got the girl, they had a great time. They had sex, which is sometimes for me synonymous with having a great time. And in Austin Powers, that's what that character is about. The problem with blaxploitation is that it didn't lead to the next step. I mean, after these movies ran their course, because essentially they were the same movie being made over and over again, then the studios just kind of said, well, black audiences don't want to go anymore.
Not long ago, Samuel L. Jackson starred in the remake of Shaft. Can the movie have the same kind of pertinence, make the same kind of difference when the times have changed over 30 years?
No, it really cannot. That can't happen because Shaft came out of nowhere. It was totally unexpected. And the original Shaft was about a man who was a part of his community and used his knowledge of that community and his relationships to affect change and to do his job. And the new Shaft, the nouveau Shaft, was about Samuel L. Jackson sort of functioning by himself. But we have to keep in mind, too, that the first popular action heroine to carry a gun in the movies and really be effective probably came from blaxploitation, and that would be Pam Grier.
Ah, I'm so glad you mentioned her, because she, of course, is the icon of blaxploitation films that is still the easiest to find. You know, I vowed when speaking with you never to use the word persona, but I'm going to use it for Pam Grier because she's kept that persona for 25, 30 years now.
What's great, too, about Pam Grier is that Quentin Tarantino took Jackie Brown, which is an Elmore Leonard novel about a middle-aged white stewardess, and built it around that persona you're talking about. He saw the utility in that. He gives her a great entrance, an entrance scored by a theme song from another great blaxploitation picture, Across 110th Street. And she comes through on the moving walkway through LAX. Essentially, it's a recreation of the Dustin Hoffman entrance from The Graduate. He's using all these things to evoke our memories of movies and then to tell us we're about to get something different from The Graduate and also different from Elmore Leonard, too. And she basically holds the movie. It's wonderful to see a black actress of that age being given the chance to hold the movie together, and she does it magnificently.
Yeah. Let me ask about Undercover Brother, because this is a film that, even if it's a send-up of the blaxploitation films in the 70s, it still seems to come back to an undercurrent, which is the distrust of white power figures and put it most bluntly, even white people generally.
What has a man got to do with fried chicken? Is that his big plan to get black people to eat junk food?
Open your eyes, Undercover Brother. This has to do with discrediting the general. That is the white man's tactique. He don't want no black president. You've seen it all through history. They never give black man credit. Jesus Christ, black man. Babe Ruth, black man. Madonna sleeps with black men. Think about it.
I only wish the New York Times wasn't suppressing all that information, but we're busted now. And NPR is a part of this big media conspiracy too, isn't it?
Run it down for me. Run it down for me, Elvis.
Oh, you're scaring me now. Scott Simon, black man. Susan Stamberg, black man.
Oh, no. Oh, gosh.
Okay, that was Eddie Griffin, Dave Chappelle, and Shy McBride.
I wonder, at the same time, when they're the comic send-ups of the films of the 1970s, does it in any way minimize what I take to be the original message that African-American audiences and their interests were often disregarded and disrespected by Hollywood and the creative establishment?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. And what's even more interesting now is it becomes essentially another kind of sampling, another way that black culture is sort of co-opted and minimized because it becomes a joke. There was a sense that these heroes could right these wrongs. That was the true accomplishment that these movies offered. And I think there's a tendency to sort of banalize that and when they become the subject of parody as they do in something like Undercover Brother.
Elvis, thanks very much.
Thank you, Scott.
Elvis Mitchell, our entertainment commentator here on Weekend Edition, also movie critic for The New York Times.